The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We're always glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about what's going on with the market in terms of the job market, what's going on in terms of hiring, clearance jobs, and everything else. We've got one of our favorite guests with us, Mike Bruni. He's Director of Talent Acquisition at SC3, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his company. But we've had him on before, and he's definitely a person who has the insight to know the market. He's been around in recruiting and the human resources dynamic and the talent acquisition market for many, many years in this industry, in government contracting and intel, defense, national security markets. So he has he has basically an understanding, a pulse of what's going on. He's also the president of Project Save, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. It's a great nonprofit that works to help get people hired. So we'll find out a little bit more about Project Save. Mike, so glad to have you.
Hey, happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Derek. Always a pleasure.
Always. Mike, you know, in terms of the market right now, and as we're looking at, you know, what's going on, unique market and everything else, where are we standing right now? Good market for job seekers, bad market for job seekers? What are you seeing in this industry at the moment?
Okay, and you know, I'll compare it to the last time, Derek, we chatted. At that time, I think there was there was more uncertainty, I think, at that time, a couple months back. I think we have seen improvement. As you can see, you know, with the unemployment rate continues to keep dropping based on, of course, the numbers. However, I'm seeing it here firsthand. I'm seeing the market really come around and get better. I will still say that it's a very competitive marketplace. We've got a lot of talented people out in the market, so there's still competition. So if you're in the market looking for new opportunities, if you're active pursuing, if you're in job transition, you're still going to find it competitive, and it's probably still going to take you a little longer to get hired. You're probably going to have to do a few more interviews than you typically did a number of years ago, but it's still a market that defines you by your skill sets, and if your skill sets are in high demand, you're going to be more sought after. If not, it's going to be a little bit more challenging, but overall, all in all, I think we're seeing an uptick in the market, and I still think that's going to continue going forward. I think the projections are showing that we do anticipate continued uptick throughout FY 2016.
Outstanding. I mean, that's really good news for job seekers, you know, although it may, like you said, be a little bit more of a struggle. You know, when you look at the people who have clearances, I mean, I heard a report that right now there are more jobs for clearances than there are people who have clearances. Is that the case right now?
Absolutely. That's exactly true. You know, over the last couple of years, I'd say probably in that 2009 timeframe is when we had noticed sort of a decline in the issuance of clearances across the board. I think with the post 9/11 buildup up until roughly about 2009, you saw, you know, a tremendous buildup, an issuance of a lot of clearances. I don't have the actual figure. But since then, it's sort of come down. A lot of that has to do with budget, obviously with the missions overseas drawing down, affected the contractor base here, and we saw less clearances being issued. And obviously with lack of work, with folks unfortunately being laid off and so forth, that had an impact for some of those folks did not come back into the government contracting community. They may have left the area. They may have gone into the commercial marketplace. Absolutely. From where I sit today, I can tell you firsthand that we are certainly, the opportunities out here certainly outnumber the candidate pool, which leads to obviously fierce competition among employers, be it private sector, be it the government. We are all fighting over the same talent. So there's certainly a large war of talent going on here, particularly in the D.C. metro area.
You know, with all of that, is it at a market where no matter what clearance you have, if you have a public trust, a secret, a top secret, I mean, of course, the higher clearance that you have, top secret SCI, top secret SCI with Poly, then that's going to make you more marketable. But is it a market where even the lower level people, the lower level, I should say, clearance holders, are they also being sought after?
Absolutely. And I think more importantly than clearance, and I think we may have mentioned this last time we chatted, we're looking at skill set. And I think I mentioned it before, a security clearance in general is not going to land you the job. Yes, there may be opportunities out there that if you have the appropriate access, there may be firms out there and firms out there that will invest in you skill-wise. But really, as an employer, from what I'm seeing in the market, from what we're seeing in reporting and whatnot, firms are hiring you for your skills. Government agencies are hiring you for your skills. So that's the first piece of this. So to meet those qualifications, it's the hard skills, and of course it's the soft skills. Obviously having a clearance at an appropriate level or at that particular level is certainly going to make you a really, really A-plus candidate. But for the most part, we're still seeking the skill sets. That's in higher demand than the clearances themselves.
You know, when you look at that, Mike, and you definitely, you know, give a good point, because some people just think that if I got the clearance, then I'm automatically in, you know. And just what you're just mentioning is that the skill sets right now are really even more important. Is that the case in terms of if a person has the skill sets, will the employer invest in them to get that clearance? I mean, you know, is of course possibly on cyber, but if it's other areas, are we seeing employers now reinvesting and saying, you know what, we'll get you the clearance because you have the skill sets we need?
It's possible. A lot of that really is determined by the government customer. So ultimately, we are at their, you know, beck and call for that, or their mercy in issuance, because that's a government decision. Private sector, obviously being a prime contractor, may allow you the ability to sponsor for that, but ultimately that comes down to the government customer, and that could be obviously a budgetary reason. The fact that they may not necessarily sponsor could come down to dollars. I will say this. I think many companies, many of which I've had conversations with, be it small, mid-size, or large firms, there does appear to be this direction of growth, where I think from about 2009 and until maybe even early last year, with a lot of the continuing resolutions and some of the budget battles we've seen, companies were still more or less cutting. They were drawing down, consolidating, and really refocusing their efforts on some of the newer capabilities that folks were improving upon or developing. I think now most of the companies here in the Beltway are starting to really predict growth. I don't think it's a sharp growth. I think it's going to be gradual over the course of time, but it's good news, I think, that we're finally starting to see companies invest back into the workforce more so than they've done in the last couple of years. So signs are good. It looks good.
When you think about the skills, Mike, you know, what are the skills that you're seeing that are very, very high in demand right now, in terms of, you know, and even for a person who either has them or a person who says, I'm going to invest and get them? What are the skills that you're seeing that are really, really high right now?
And I'm going to specifically focus on the federal government contracting, the private sector. Government probably, but I'll speak specifically about the private sector. We're always looking for good IT and engineering talent, first and foremost. I think it's probably between those. And again, that's very broad, but you know, you can break out from information technology and engineering a number of different disciplines, but certainly they are probably in the most high demand. Accounting and finance. We're always on the hunt for good accounting and finance type folks. As far as some of the capability areas, okay, that are in high demand, certainly cybersecurity, certainly healthcare, big data. You know, we hear that all the time. Big data. What is big data? It's basically analytics. And that really goes across the board, from federal government contracting into the commercial marketplace. And I think we can throw cybersecurity in there as well, where you see, obviously, a demand in the federal government contracting space, but also in the commercial marketplace with cybersecurity. So they continue to be the hot areas, the most in-demand areas. And if you really break it down, a lot of those skill sets in demand are within that engineering and information technology area. So it's a hot market right now, and I think that goes back to we just don't have enough talent. I mean, the demand is certainly outweighing the supply.
You know, with all of that, is this something that a person should invest in? If you do begin to invest in getting, you know, either certifications or, you know, getting other things, is this kind of a, you know, is this worth your money or the return on investment? If a person says, you know what, I'm going to go to school, getting certain certifications or degrees in technology and everything else, is this a market that we're going to see maybe 5-10 years down the line?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to throw my sort of career counseling hat on to answer this particular question, because it's advice that I give to a lot of the students that I speak with, undergrad, graduate students, because I typically get this question, particularly in a competitive market where someone continues to keep applying and they're networking and they're doing everything they're told to do. However, they're coming up short because of that competition. And the knee-jerk reaction is, well, I need to change my international relations degree into an engineering degree. My first question is this what you want to do? Number one, be honest with yourself. Is this something that you want to do before making that decision? Because if you're making a decision to go to school to get something or certification, it's obviously there's a financial investment there that you're going to make, and you don't want it to be a knee-jerk reaction. So as long as it's a well-thought-out, educated decision, yes, and absolutely. If you're in the technology field, particularly in the federal government contracting industry, certifications are very heavy. They tend to be, in many cases, minimum requirements, having a particular type of Microsoft certification or Cisco certification or some type of cybersecurity certification. Having those certainly will give you a leg up, and I think if you're going into those fields, they can do nothing but benefit you. And then there's degrees, you know, engineering, computer information systems, things of that, computer science and management information systems. Those degrees, those fields tend to prepare you for, you know, that particular type of discipline.
We're talking to Mike Bruni. He's Director of Talent Acquisition at SC3. We'll find out a little bit more about the company very, very shortly. He's also the president of Project Save. We're going to find out more about Project Save as we get towards the end of the show. But he is a person who has been around the recruiting market for many, many years. And I've known Mike for many years. He's always been a valuable insight to people. And that's why we always have him on the show, because he really gives some good advice and some good insight on the trends. Also, good advice for job seekers on how to navigate this market and be successful. We're going to continue talking about the job market, what's going on. We're going to also start getting some advice from Mike on what should you do if you're a job seeker. How should you kind of navigate, maybe reposition yourself or whatever you need to do to succeed? You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about the job market, talking about what's going on and getting some insight on some of the trends, on some of the different dynamics of this job market in 2016. Is it a good job market, bad job market? What's in store for job seekers? What are employers looking for right now? We've been getting some insights from Mike Bruni. He's the Director of Talent Acquisition for SC3. That's a company that is focuses on the government market and really, really kind of is a growing company that is one of the many out there who are kind of small to mid-size or to large contractors who are in the government market providing those services to that government client. We'll find out a little bit more about that. Mike is also the president of Project Save, and we'll also find out more about that very, very shortly. Hey, Mike, tell us about your company real quick before we go in, SC3, and where can they find information at?
Sure. You can go to, of course, our website at sc3.com. That's SierraCharlie3.com. And really, SC3, we're a leading provider of high-end mission support consulting and technology solutions in support of our government customers. So for a mission-focused organization, we're roughly about 550 employees strong. We're based here in Alexandria, Virginia, and certainly do our best to provide the best of capabilities to our government customers. So really, really cutting-edge company. We're young. We've only been around a couple of years, but have a lot of good things going on, and I'm happy to be part of the organization here, assisting them with building out their talent acquisition program. So good stuff. Good stuff going on.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Hey, you know, Mike, you know, you've been in talent acquisition, and it's changed from recruiting to talent acquisition and kind of goes back and forth. The market in terms of the talent acquisition people, I mean, you know, what are you guys finding, you know, when you talk to other people in this market, in this business, what are you finding? The challenge of you know, finding that right person. What happens in terms of this market?
You know, it's certainly, and not to be biased, but I say this constantly, I think talent acquisition may be one of the most difficult functions in an organization, be it private sector, be it government. Again, going back to that war for talent, the fact is, for the skill sets, for the expertise, the capabilities we need, there is a drought out there for talent. So it's really comes down to, Derek, a lot of us here have to compete with each other, and typically we are pursuing each other's talent. It's the only way to do the best thing for our organization. So I don't think you can describe it any other way but a real war for talent. So how do you overcome that? Well, you have to be the best you can be as a private employer, as a government as a government agency. Who's the best? A lot of it comes down to brand. When someone with hot skills, possibly with the appropriate clearances or whatnot, is out looking for a job, they know they're in high demand. It really comes down to who's the best, or what's the best organization for me? Who offers that environment? Who offers that culture? So I think a lot of it, when you talk about, hey, should I go to work for the government or go to the work for private industry, my advice is think about what's the best fit for you. They're both good. They're both, there's pros and cons to everything. I think you really have to give it some thought. Going to work for the government, typically folks think, hey, more stability. And that's probably true to a certain extent. However, maybe some people go into the private sector for more flexibility. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people do. I don't think one is better than the other. I think it really comes down to the individual and the ability to find the best fit for you, environment, culture, mission, what's going to make you happy, what's going to give you fulfillment, satisfaction in your career.
You know, I get a lot of people, and even government people these days, are sometimes looking at the contracting world and kind of saying, you know, this, you know, may not be that bad out there. And some, and we've got a situation where maybe some government people, rather than staying in the government for 20, 30 years, they may be kind of dipping in and out and go to a contractor and then maybe swing back to government. What are you seeing? I mean, are you seeing that happen more and more, Mike?
Absolutely. We've seen it more now than I think we've ever. I'd say, you know, 15 years ago, I don't remember this happening. You know, you would see folks typically come out of government, you know, maybe after a career looking for a second career in private industry. I haven't seen in the last, say, 5 to 10 years, we have seen more what I'll call flip-flopping, folks going from government to private sector into government, and vice versa. And we see it sometimes throughout a person's career. They've made that jump a couple times. So we are seeing that more and more, and it's becoming more common. And I think a lot of that has to do, again, with that war for talent. You know, everyone is looking for the best people. We're all looking to deliver on our mission and provide our capabilities. And I think with that in mind, because it's such a competitive market, all of the employers, be it private sector or government, are more aggressive than ever in going after that talent and really sort of laying the groundwork or, you know, laying the pavement here for folks to come on in. So it makes for an interesting market. It makes for a very challenging market. But yeah, I think I've never seen it this common as we do today. And I think that'll continue.
Is this part of the new kind of, how people talk about millennials and other kind of dynamics and just a new grouping of people who are no longer just wed to an organization? When it be, people don't look at organizations as being a dynamic of, hey, they're not going to be necessarily loyal to me, and so there's no need for me to be loyal to them on that level. I have to do what's best for my career. Is that more of the mindset that you're seeing?
I think that's part of it. I think because of the competitiveness and the competition, mm-hmm. you see it. Mm-hmm. I do think it's also just part of the modern day mindset. I think the traditional mindset of staying with an organization for 25, 30 years, we're not really seeing that anymore. Not even in the government. Mm-hmm. And I think yes, this new generation that's coming in. I think I saw a recent statistic that, you know, the millennials, quote unquote, the millennial generation will see they'll go through four jobs by the time they're 26. So, you know, traditional minded folks may look at that as, hey, they're job hoppers or whatnot. And, you know, it does raise red flags. Sure. Don't get me wrong. But the fact of the matter is it's becoming more common. And I think we're getting more used to folks not staying in roles for as long as we've traditionally have seen. Now, that being said, does that have an impact on your business, an impact on your mission? Absolutely. The cost involved with turnover, obviously delivering mission, and then the cost it takes to backfill and bring other folks in, it's very, very destructive to a private, to an employer's bottom line. So it is a problem. And I think the more that we see this, the more competitive, the more, you know, the more that demand outweighs the supply, we're going to see more and more of it, because there's always going to be an employer out there soliciting your best talent. Right. And sometimes they're making folks offers that they can't refuse. Right. And it's just a cycle that we're in, and I don't see any end to it anytime soon.
Mike, are you looking for talent that's not always out there, you know, that they may not have their resume, you know, they may be on just LinkedIn and just have a profile up, you've met them in a networking event? I mean, are you kind of out there looking for talent that may not necessarily be looking, but they are the highly skilled person that you kind of find out, and then you kind of, you know, reach out to them individually? Is that how this is working these days?
To a certain extent, yes, and I think the good companies do that, or the good organizations are actively doing that. One of the things about targeting what we would quote-unquote call a passive candidate, the fact of the matter is I think 70-some percent of the employed are at least curious about new opportunities.
Sure.
So roughly about 7 in 10 people would at least be willing to talk to you whether they're actively looking or not. Yes, I think it benefits the company because you're looking at less competition, okay? So if you happen to solicit someone who's not actively posting a resume or even thinking about a new job, mm-hmm. but you catch them on a day where they have some time to chat with you, and you present an interesting opportunity and you present an interesting environment, and it's about that approach, then certainly you may be one-on-one with that particular employee. So, yes, it certainly gives the soliciting company a leg up, and possibly because you were actively approached, okay, you were proactively approached, I should say, as opposed to you sending in a resume or being networked, it can come off as, I see it come off to a potential candidate is much more positive, that this organization was interested in me and solicited me as opposed to me applying, if that makes sense.
Yeah, without question. Mm-hmm. And it seems as if, you know, that probably is part of the business right now, is to know who these people are, you know, and kind of find out, you know, these passive candidates who may be the most highly skilled person, but you got to find them and make that approach the right kind of way in order to get their interest, right?
Absolutely. I think the companies that do their homework, that do their research, that really are able to key in and identify the experts in the field. And in some cases, I have to tell you, Derek, sometimes you can count those people on one hand. I know I've done that. So, you know, in identifying the experts in the field, it allows you to actually plan your approach, mm-hmm. plan your solicitation. You know, the true term of quote-unquote headhunting kind of stems from that. Headhunting is your ability to go out and find experts in the field that you're seeking talent. And really, you have to really fine-tune that today to be sort of that employer of choice. Not only do you have to offer the environment and the culture and the mission, but you also have to have a very effective outreach program. That's my opinion. I've seen where that's been successful, and I think some of the top employers are actually employing those particular types of capabilities.
We're talking to Mike Bruni. He's Director of Talent Acquisition at a company called SC3. You can find him at sc3.com. He's also the president of Project Save. When we come back, we're going to find out more about Project Save. We're talking about the job market. We're talking about what's going on out there. What should job seekers know? What is the job market looking like in terms of trends, in terms of hot jobs, in terms of hot industries, and everything else? We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the job market. We're talking about the government job market in terms of government contracting jobs, in terms of what's going on. Is it a good market out there? Is it a bad market? We've been finding out that it may be a pretty good market. in 2016 may be the time, if you're a job seeker, to kind of be out there really kind of looking. It's a job market that is really, really very, very skill-based, that we found out that if you got the right skills, then you probably will be some of the most competitive and be one of the people who are sought after by these employers right now. So there's a number of different things to think about in this job market, and we're getting these insights from Mike Bruni. Mike Bruni is Director of Talent Acquisition from SC3. It's a company that focuses in on the government market. You can find them at SC3.com. If you also are in the Virginia area, he's the president of Project Save, and we're going to find out about what Project Save is right now. Mike, what is Project Save? And you're the president of it, but you're doing a lot of stuff with recruiters and helping people find jobs. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Derek. Yes, Project Save, standing for the Staffing Alliance of Virginia Employers. A little history. Project Save was started actually back in 1990. The founder, Gary Clough, is in my opinion, a mentor of mine, but in my opinion is also a local legend in the field of recruitment and HR. So Project Save has grown over the last 26 years. It's really an organization designed for recruiters and HR professionals to share and exchange ideas. It's also an organization that promotes, the networking of job seekers, connecting them with recruiters, and then HR and recruiting professionals to be connected with each other. It's also an educational organization where we talk about, we meet once a month at a location, a hosted location around Northern Virginia, to discuss, current trends in recruitment and in employability and in talent management and retention and things of that nature. So we try to cover all of the hot topics within our particular functional industry. In addition to that, we are a Virginia nonprofit, so we are also in business really to help raise money for certain causes throughout the year, things of that nature. So there are a couple different components, but ultimately at the end of the day, it's an organization really for recruitment awareness, HR awareness, but also lends itself as more or less an educational vehicle for those in the job transition.
And one unique thing that I heard about Project Save is that you guys will sometimes take a candidate and pass them around to different recruiters to see if you can help them get a position. Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have a number of folks that will come, again, majority of them being recruiters and HR professionals, but we have, candidates in the marketplace here who may have, diverse backgrounds in sales and engineering and so forth. And what we tend to do is we tend to make sure that they get introduced around with folks in all different fields. So it's really, really a good organization that really allows you to network. But at the same time, as a job seeker in transition, it gives you the ability actually to pick up different tips and whatnot and how to navigate the job market, which is really, really good. And we get a lot of positive feedback from the folks that do attend meetings on what they've picked up and how they've actually used that in their search. And in many cases, I do get a lot of good positive stories back of how a particular introduction to Project Save actually led to the next job. So the feel-good stories are numerous, and we really, really pride ourselves on that.
That is great. Where can they find more information about this, Mike? I mean, is there a way they can find it?
There is. You can go to, and this is a little drawn out, we have our website, which is project-s-a-v-e.com. Or you could go to our LinkedIn group. We have a Facebook page under Project Save. Ideally, for those that may be interested, if you want to be alerted to our monthly meetings, please go to our meetup site under Project Save. So we have a very robust social media presence. So if you're out there, you can certainly find us. We'd love to see you at one of our meetings.
And that's the meetup.com site where they can go in and maybe type in Project Save and they can find out what's going on.
Correct.
Got you. You know, as we look at this, Mike, I mean, especially in when it's a job seekers market where, they can kind of make choices a little bit more and everything else. What's your thoughts on, you've dealt with all of them from small to mid-sized to large. What's your thoughts on, working, the benefits and drawbacks for working for each, in this kind of market right now?
As far as just so I understand your question, Derek, can you explain that?
As for a job seeker, sometimes people are thinking, hey, a small company is going to be a little bit more innovative. A large company provides a little bit more stability. You know, midsize is kind of, you know, they're in the middle of the entrepreneurial. You know, I mean, and it may be by what the job seeker is looking, but what have you seen as it relates to, you know, are these the case if a job seeker is saying, listen, is it more beneficial for me to be with a small company because I can grow with it? Or sometimes people get scared because a small company doesn't have the track record and everything like that. Should they be scared of that in this market? Or are small companies, you know, growing very, very quickly and will provide certain levels of stability? What's your thoughts on that in terms of a job seeker as they're considering the market?
Sure. And it's a question I get a lot. And again, I'm going to go back to the same, you know, between government and private sector. It really comes down to the individual. Now, there's pros and cons to large firms as opposed to small firms. And I can kind of generalize here. You know, one, I think, again, is not better than the other. It's the best fit for you. So what do we typically find in a large company that we don't find in a small company and vice versa? Well, typically in a large company, obviously, you're probably in many cases going to have access to more resources. Okay, so you may have a bigger budget. Your resources, you obviously have name recognition. Many more people out in the market may know you. You have a company brand. Many people like that. You tend to have a larger support staff. Your position tends to be more defined, meaning that you're focusing on one area or two areas. So very defined because it is a large organization. Small company, you know, if you're the type of person that likes to maybe interact with your CEO on a day-to-day basis, you're probably not going to be able to do that in a larger firm, depending on your role, of course. But in a small company, yeah, you could be housed, you could be in an office or a facility, you know, right down the hallway, say, from the CEO and the board of directors. So some folks like that feel, the ability to have access to that C-suite. So, you know, that's obviously a benefit for folks. When we look at compensation, sometimes, not in all cases, and I'm certainly not generalizing, but there are examples of smaller companies being a little bit more competitive. You know, when you have a smaller company, you certainly don't have to, you know, sustain that large, you know, 20,000 employee, you know, overhead base that you have. You tend to be a little bit more streamlined and flexible. So compensation may be a little bit more, you know, attractive to an individual. I think many people that are drawn to the smaller companies like the feel, like that intimate feel. They have they tend to have more access to folks around the company. They tend to be more, not that larger companies aren't. I've worked for both, and both are good in a lot of ways. Smaller companies tend to be very niche. Their capability is a little smaller, but niche. So they tend to specialize in certain areas, which tends to catch the eye of whether, you know, somebody specialized in that area or a particular customer that views that capability, you know, as paramount to their mission. So I've seen that where it's good. Flip side to that, on a small company, you know, again, you may not necessarily have the resources. You may have to wear many different hats, you know, because of obviously a smaller environment. So there's many pros and cons. It really comes down to the individual and what fits best for them. And yes, Derek, going back, there are certainly always, there's always the chance, be it a larger company, be it a small company, be it a mid-sized company. In our business here, probably any industry that you could say this, there's always the possibility of acquisition. So you can never take that off the table. You can pick up the newspaper tomorrow just here locally and see where in the federal government contracting industry you're seeing constant acquisitions and mergers. We tend to see this, you know, post-boom times. And we've seen it here over the last couple of years. Like I always say, if you're driving up the Dulles Toll Road, you or going around the Beltway, you typically see the change in the building of the company names on the buildings quite frequently in these times. So very common. So it's a very fluid type of environment because it's fast changing and it's fast moving.
We're talking to Mike Bruni. He is the director of talent acquisition for SC3. You can find him at SC3.com. He's also the president of Project Save. If you go on LinkedIn or Facebook or you go on meetup.com, type in Project Save, and then you can find their information, find their website, find out how to get to one of their meetings. A great organization that's organization of recruiters and HR professionals, but they're out there helping people. They're out there exchanging ideas to kind of figure out how do we hire the best talent. And then also, too, they're out there helping the job seekers, helping them get into the right positions as they go forward. You can find all these things on all those different websites. We're going to be right back. We're going to go into social media and the job search. Mike mentioned LinkedIn and all the different social media sites. We're going to talk about that. That's still a very, very good tool in order to get the job. So we're going to be talking about that when we come back. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about the job market. We've been having an interesting conversation about what's going on, some trends in the job market right now for government contracting. What's going on as it relates to this market? It seems as if it is a job market for the job seeker right now. For those who have clearances, there are more positions out there than there are people with clearances. And then also, it's a job market for people with specialized skills. So if you have certain specialized skills, IT, accounting, finance, and other things like that, it's also a very, very good market for you right now. We're talking to Mike Bruni. He is the Director of Talent Acquisition for SC3. You can find them at sc3.com. He's also the President of Project Save. You can find them on LinkedIn at Project Save, on Facebook on Project Save, and then also meetup.com under Project Save. There's a great organization that really is recruiters and HR professionals trying to work to help people, but also exchange ideas, educate each other on the best practices so that they can do things to hire people the best way. Mike, as we look at certain things, you mentioned a couple of different things, LinkedIn and all the other kind of pieces. Is social media, you know, what's your thoughts? Is social media still the playing field in which people are using to get hired? Is LinkedIn still a great resource? Are there other sites that people should be thinking about? What's your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. And yes, I think social media obviously has changed the game for job seeking as well as recruitment. A lot of it has to do with this. Is it that all of these social sites are so great? Could be, might not be. Fact of the matter is this. If you are in career transition or you're looking for an opportunity, keep in mind that roughly 93 to 94% of employers who were polled use LinkedIn. Many use it exclusively to find their talent. So certainly if you are in the job search market right now, you're in career transition, you certainly will need a presence to be recognized, okay? And you want to make sure that you're as targeted as possible, that you convey your skills, you make your profile on LinkedIn or any social media venue as robust as possible. You want to make sure that the skill sets that you're conveying to the targeted audience are actually being recognized. That being said, you should get response. If it's not working, continue to be creative with your profiles. So yes,
Mike, let me ask about this real quick, because you mentioned about profiles. How detailed should a person be on the profile? I mean, should it be a very thorough and expansive? Should it be kind of like, you know, the one page resume concept? I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
From my opinion, and if you look at some of the statistics as far as your ability to get looked at, if you will, I mean, for LinkedIn, for example, on LinkedIn, you're roughly 14 times more likely to be clicked on if you have a profile picture. You are, certain times more likely if you have a certain education up there. I don't have the actual figure, but the more robust your profile, the more detailed it is. When you're looking at a social media profile, and again, I'll keep going back to LinkedIn. If you're looking at LinkedIn, okay, it operates different than the resume. Mm-hmm. The resume is typically a document that is submitted or referred or networked into an organization. So typically, the employer is reacting to a resume. On LinkedIn, we tend to be more proactive. We're out there actually looking for people. So you want to make it as robust as possible. So when that keyword search is done and, you know, the results come back to the screener going through them, you want to make sure that you are, and it will rank you based on the relevance of the keyword search. So as you're putting together your profile, you want to make sure that you have as many keywords in that profile as possible, similar to the resume, but a recruiter or a hiring authority in an organization has a different mindset. So when you're contacted through LinkedIn, typically it's a proactive contact, okay? They notice something in your profile as opposed to reactive. When we react as a recruiting professional, a talent acquisition professional, we're typically doing because of the volume and so forth, mm-hmm. it's sort of the process of elimination. Whereas LinkedIn, it's more sought after because you've had people more proactively going out there and seeking talent. So, yes, it's certainly a benefit, particularly if you are in higher competition, okay? So, in other words, if you specialize in an area where maybe the supply outweighs the demand, and there are instances of that out there, then you're going to have to be a little bit more aggressive, and you are going to have to really be able to market yourself a little better than some of your competitors. So, yes, I think the more robust it is, the more fields that you have filled out, instead of a silhouette, put a professional picture up there, professional meaning what is in line with your field, okay? So you want to make sure that it's really built for someone to see and that someone will actually react and get in touch with you, if that makes sense. If you specialize in a certain field, be it engineering, be it software development, be it policy or what have you, go find maybe a social media venue or platform that actually specializes in your field of expertise. You know, professional associations sometimes have, you know, a social media site or, you know, maybe a Facebook page or whatnot. Make sure that you really investigate that and make your presence, you know, make your presence known on those sites. So as employers are actually trolling through those, they will come across here. Your probability of being recognized goes up with more, you know, obviously with more marketing and the projection of your skills.
You know, with all of that, Mike, and we've got like 1 minute left. If you had to give any kind of advice, you know, about three kind of just real good pieces of advice for a job seeker, what would they be as we're going for 2016?
First and foremost, the ability to market your skills correctly. So in other words, you have to prepare. You've really got to give it some thought about what it is that you want to do. Mm-hmm. The more targeted, the more detailed you are, and your ability to actually convey those skill sets, very important. Being a generalist, going out there and marketing yourself, very difficult for an employer to determine what you want to do. Your probability of success goes down. Your probability of contact goes down. So be very targeted, be very detailed. Secondly, you want to make sure that you really research the market. You really need to find out who's looking for your expertise, and you have to find out what organizations you feel are a good fit for you. So it's a two-way street. So really the preparation, the self-assessment, secondly, the research being done. You want to make sure that the opportunity that you find is in an organization that's the best fit for you. Those two, before you do anything else, before you put a profile up there, before you put a resume together, I think you really, really do need to figure both of those out. Preparation, planning certainly makes this process easier. Well, I should say less frustrating, less stressful. Sure. I don't know that it's easy. Sure. The career transition can be very challenging, but the better prepared you are, the higher probability of success in a shorter period of time.
Mike, I know you're doing so much more. We meant to get to the veteran stuff, but we're going to have you back because you're doing a lot of stuff with veterans. So we're going to definitely have you back in the next few weeks or so to talk more about the initiatives you're taking in terms of veterans, Northern Virginia. I know Northern Virginia, other parts are really, really kind of pushing to help veterans get employed, put them into great positions and find opportunities for them. So I just want to put you on notice. I'm going to be contacting you about the next piece of it. But you guys are doing some great things. And SC3 is also a company focused in on veterans as well. Thank you so much, Mike.
Derek, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.